Hard Feelings by Mark Coggins is a bang bang thrill ride, says best-selling author Seth Harwood, who adds that the lead character of Winnie is a female Jack Reacher. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 25. Reardon. We set out at about 11 the next morning, Ray cheerful and keen in the front seat with me, Winnie grousing in back. Although I didn't remember the exact location of the no-dumping zone, I knew it was on a stretch of Alexander Valley Road, 5 or 6 miles from the Healdsburg city center. We found it at the apex of a broad curve in the road, across from a forested tract of land. Traffic on the road was light but constant, so it was unlikely we would be able to retrieve the pack from the camper shell completely unobserved by passers-by. More to the point, a baby blue Pacific Gas and Electric van was parked by a power pole 50 yards down on the same side of the road. A guy in a yellow hard hat stood by the pole with a pile of insulated wire spooled at his feet.
"Right there," said Winnie. "That's one of them. He's watching to see if we come back."
I powered around the curve until we were well out of sight of the PG&E guy and pulled over. I turned back to Winnie. "Why would they think we're coming back?"
"Good question. Anyone with an ounce of sense would know better."
"He could be one of them," admitted Ray. "Remember the bogus power company people in the Springs?"
"Yeah, but he might be Joe Working Stiff who could give a rat's ass if we rummage around the garbage dump. We have to find some way to find out without tipping our hand."
"I'll do it," said Ray.
"How?"
"I'll walk along the road like I'm a vagrant looking for cans and such. I'll wander down into the dump site and nose around in the camper shell. If he reacts, I'll just play dumb and let him rouse me out of there. If he doesn't, I'll take the pack and go."
"Okay, that could work, but we can't let you risk it without backup. If he really is one of them, he might not buy your story."
"Let's just shoot him and be done with it," snapped Winnie.
Now who's forgetting the conversations about mission parameters? No civilian casualties. She let out an impatient sigh.
"We'll double back on foot through the wooded area and take a position in the trees on the other side of the road. If Ray gets into trouble, we'll be with him in an instant."
"Better." It turned out that Ray needed very little help to make a convincing dumpster diver. We gave him the black plastic garbage bag we had used to collect trash on the drive from Nevada City and found him a long stick for poking and prodding. He already had the shabby clothes, the long gray beard, and a general air of malnourishment. "Go slow," I told him, "and make it look good. We need time to get into position." He nodded and trotted across the road, where he almost immediately stooped to pick up a can from the shoulder.
"He's found his calling," said Winnie.
"A little eerie, isn't it? You ready?"
"Yeah, let's roll."
We jogged into the stand of oak and eucalyptus trees, the uneven ground carpeted with leaf litter, curling eucalyptus bark, and acorns. Winnie carried her sawed off by her leg. I had my Luger in a shoulder holster strapped under my windbreaker. The slap, slap, slap of it against my side as I ran did nothing to ease the pain in my ribs. We came up behind a wide-trunked oak at a spot halfway between the PG&E guy and the garbage dump. If he moved to interfere with Ray, he would have to cross directly in front of us. From our vantage point, he certainly seemed legit. His van looked right. He was dressed right. He had all the right tools on his belt, and there was definitely something going on at the top of the power pole. One end of the cable coiled at his feet ran to an insulator on a crosspiece above. The only problem was that he didn't appear to be doing anything. He stood by his pole, dividing his attention between the wire at his feet and the view down the road in either direction. When Ray came shuffling around the curve, the PG&E guy didn't pay him any particular attention. When Ray gingerly negotiated the guardrail and the drop to the wash, the man still didn't react. Same when Ray traded his stick for a rusted golf club taken from a ripped bag. But when Ray started poking the club in the camper shell, the PG&E guy turned to face the dump, bringing his hand to a leather pouch on his belt. And as Ray reached into the camper to pull out the pack, the man produced an automatic and broke into a sprint. Winnie and I launched out from behind the tree.
"You grab him and I'll finish him," she shouted.
It was a good plan, but it wasn't going to be as easy as that. Just as we reached the asphalt, a Frito-Lay truck came barreling around the curb, heading towards Healdsburg. We skidded to a stop inches from the yellow line. The truck rumbled past, buffeting us in its slipstream and momentarily blinding me with dust. It delayed us for a three count, but it also shielded us from the view of the phony PG&E guy. Now we used that to our advantage. I did a steeplechase number over the guardrail, managing to land upright at a point equidistant from Ray and the winemaker's man. I let my forward momentum carry me into a diving tackle just as he leveled the automatic on Ray's crouching form. We crash-landed into the baked earth, jolting the hard hat from his head and, despite the cushion of his ample gut, punishing my injured ribs. I doubled up in pain, losing my hold around his torso. He kicked at my shoulders and head with his work boots, rolling and squirming out of range as he did. I tried to snag his ankle, but managed to grab only a handful of the fabric of his work pants. He was trying to kick free when Winnie's feet flashed by. He yelled, "Get off me, bitch!" Then came the sound of vertebrae popping, and his leg went slack. I trundled to my feet, gripping my injured ribs with one hand while I explored the bump over my right eye with the other. Winnie already had the PG&E guy by the collar and was dragging him back towards the power pole.
"Get the pack," she said. "I'll hide the body in the van."
"Right." Ray watched me approach with a look of sick fascination. He was sitting by the camper shell surrounded by beer cans with the instrument pack pulled halfway out of the camper door.
"Jesus," he said. "This really is for keeps."
"I keep telling you that."
"Yeah, you do. Help me get the instruments out of the pack. We need to find the tracker module."
We yanked the electronics out of the nylon harness. I'd never seen the goods in the daylight until now. It was clear that most of the smarts were in the ball-like turret that protruded over the wearer's head. Ray pointed out a central spine that ran from the turret down the girder-like pole into the boxy base.
"That's the communication bus for all the sensors and instruments," said Ray. "These modules on either side are the batteries. And, unless I'm mistaken, this doodad right here is the GPS tracker."
He pulled out a module the size of a matchbox from the communication bus at the base of the pack. A USB connector protruded from it. Ray read the writing stamped along the side.
"Yep," he said. "This is a commercial model with its own power source."
He tossed the tracker back into the camper, along with the empties where it landed with a tinny clatter.
"Consider it defanged."
I started to thank him, but a scream cut me off. Winnie was yelling my name at the top of her lungs. I twisted back to find her being dragged along the ground, clutched at the ankle by something the villagers outside Frankenstein Castle would have chased with pitchforks and torches. He was wearing a PG&E uniform like the other guy, but on him it was laughably small, coming up inches short in the legs and arms. He was 7 feet tall if he was a foot, and he had to weigh over 300 pounds. He moved with a robotic jerkiness, but I didn't feel, like I did with the guards the night before, that someone else was calling the shots. He seemed to be driving solo. I jacked out the Luger and fired two rounds into his chest. It didn't affect him in the slightest. He had to be wearing body armor, but as I knew from personal experience, the pain and shock of being hit while wearing armor was debilitating. I aimed for his thigh. The first shot went wide, but the second bit into his quadriceps, inches from his knee. This time I saw blood blossom from the wound, but if it slowed him in the least, I failed to discern it. If anything, he dragged Winnie faster, snapping her leg like a rope to whiplash her into the ground. And there was more bad news. The toggle action of my Luger had jammed open. I reached to clear it with sweaty fingers, but I was too panicked and jittery to do the job properly. "In the head," yelled Winnie. "In the head." I stooped to pick up the golf club Ray had been using and ran towards the giant, holding the club above me like a samurai sword. The giant dropped Winnie's leg and went into a defensive crouch, but he moved like a sumo wrestler in jello. I dodged past his outstretched arms and brought the club down on his hard hat. He lurched backward, tripping on the coil of wire by the power pole. The hard hat popped off as he hit the ground, and I skipped forward to tee off on his noggin like I intended to drive it 300 yards. I connected at a spot behind his left ear, sending a jolt of pain to my ribs and detaching the club head, which went gyrating off into the weeds. The giant slumped face down into the dirt, dead or unconscious. I wasn't sure which. Winnie struggled to her feet. We linked arms and jogged toward Ray, who was already hefting the instrument pack. We dodged across the highway, slipping back into the trees for the hike to the car. But just a few steps into the woods, Winnie paused to look back at the downed giant. "He's one of me," she said, and hurried on. You have been listening to No Hard Feelings, a finalist for the Forward Reviews Book of the Year Award. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.